So once upon a time, there was an international development expert. Somewhere in remote Africa, he was dedicated to learning from the local people. One day, he set out in his big, shiny white Toyota Land Cruiser to talk to local farmers. "Greetings," he called out to the farmer as he drove onto a hilly farm. "I see you have many sheep." The farmer, scanning his flock, thought that this foreigner was rather good at stating the obvious. But you never know what could come of this, so he decided to humor the foreigner. "Yes, sir, I have many sheep." "Well," said the expert, "if I can guess just how many sheep you have on your farm here, would you give me one?" The farmer thought this foreigner was a little strange, but thought he was humoring, so he said, "Well, okay, if you can guess how many sheep I have, you can pick one." So the international development expert scanned the flock scattered over the hillside, booted up his laptop, checked his GPS, made some notes, and then said, "You have exactly 584 sheep." The farmer was speechless. He said, "That's amazing. You're exactly right, so promise that you can take one." After putting one of the animals in his big Land Cruiser, the expert felt a little guilty. So he made an offer to the farmer. "I'll tell you what, if you can guess my profession, I'll give you your sheep back." So the farmer took a step back, pondered the foreigner, and announced, "You, sir, are an international development expert." So the man in the Land Cruiser was astonished. He said, "Hey, here's your sheep back, but how could you have guessed?" "Very simple," said the farmer. "First, you came onto my farm without my permission. Secondly, you told me something I already know. And thirdly, that's my dog you were about to drive away." What a beautiful day and what a beautiful sanctuary. And it's wonderful to be with you here today in Nashua. Right at the beginning, I'd like to recognize Tess George, who isn't with us. So I'll ask Adrian to pass this along. She has been enormously helpful and generous to me as I've begun this new project, Just Democracy. So I'm very grateful, and I hope Adrian will pass that along to Tess. This morning, I'd like to reflect with you about the power of our principles and the principles of our power. Let me set the scene with two more stories from our time overseas, perhaps a bit more serious this time. It's mid-2002, and Jean and I are working in Hanoi. The terrorist attacks of the previous September had led to a noticeable feeling of solidarity between we few Americans living and working there and the Vietnamese public. I certainly felt a sense of sympathy from my staff, which held steady as our nation invaded Afghanistan. Then something happens which sets the scene for the next year as we began to embark on our tragic misadventure in Iraq. The head of the Asia section of our Department of State visits Vietnam on a tour of the region. And she tells the Vietnamese government that, quote, "You are with us or you are against us." Now, to have one of our top diplomats say that anywhere is clumsy and counterproductive, but to say it in Hanoi, given the stark history that connects our two nations, is simply astonishing. And since then, as in Vietnam, our nation's standing across the world, even by our own citizens, has been severely damaged since we invaded and occupied Iraq. Flash forward to 2004. Jean and I are in Lalibela in Ethiopia, and we overhear a woman walking with all of her few possessions on her back break down in tears, wondering where she would go, where she could walk to find food. Because the rains in the Horn of Africa used to fail every decade or so, allowing for the replenishment of cattle stocks and even body mass between the failures of the rains. Nowadays, the climate has changed, and the rains fail just about every other year. So coping mechanisms in the Horn of Africa are overwhelmed. Coping mechanisms like cattle stocks that can be sold in drought years, but the cattle's all been sold. Coping mechanisms like grain storage, but the silos are empty now, and grain has to be imported. Even coping mechanisms like body fat, but nutritional status in Ethiopia declining for many years now, and people are too thin. This recovering international development expert moved back to the U.S. in 2005, partly because after working on poverty overseas for 20 years, it really felt like my own country was in trouble. I wonder how many of you think in your minds and your hearts that our country is on the wrong track now. I'm not asking for a show of hands, but if the sentiment in this room is reflective of the general public, then nearly all of you would have raised your hands high, because national polls have shown consistently over the last months that over 80% of Americans feel our country is on the wrong track. For a very long time in our country, it has been possible to deny the need for change, to say that things are just fine, to maintain that the system is working, this morning, I say to you that I'm beginning to feel a little optimistic. Optimistic because that position, that things are just fine, the system is working, can no longer be held by any reasonable person. It's even hard to find an unreasonable person these days who thinks that things are fine. We've tried waging war as a first resort. We've tried running our communities as if all that matters is profit, no matter what we do to our environment or to the people downstream. And we're all downstream, like that woman in Ethiopia. Over the last few years, many worlds are a footprint here, but over the last few years, and quite intensely over these recent days, we have witnessed the spectacular collapse of the values of greed and intolerance and arrogance that have been ascendant in our country for nearly three decades. Greed like we're seeing on Wall Street. Arrogance like that State Department official in Hanoi. They've had a long run in power, over nearly 30 years now, and over 80% of us agree that it's a sorry mess. So I know it must sound strange to express a cautious sense of optimism in these tough times, because people across the country and right here in Nashville feel a deep sense of vulnerability and worry. But what if the spirit of our age could be shifting? What if people are ready for real change? What if somehow we're being presented with an opportunity to advance the values that bring you to this sanctuary every Sunday? Principles like justice, equity, and compassion, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, the fact that we are interconnected in a web of life. Could this be our moment? Perhaps the last time I felt this way about our country was when I was a three-year-old boy in California, running through my grandmother's house yelling, "Yay, Kennedy, nasty Nixon." It's a true story. At the time, we McPeaks didn't think things could get worse than Nixon. Turns out we were wrong, but that's a story for another day. Could this be our moment? So let's assume that it is, the promise of this moment. Let's assume that we have a historic opportunity to shift our nation's culture. The bitter truth is that even if the zeitgeist is shifting, realizing a better future and advancing the values of Unitarian Universalism will not come just because we want it to. The clarity we may share as a nation, and here in New Hampshire, that we're on the wrong track won't lead to the right change just because we want it to. So what should we do? Our first task is to build the power of our principles. What you do here every Sunday, and it's crucial. But here's the thing. If we want to advance our values in the real world of our democracy, we'll have to go farther. The enduring positive change that we want for our society will not come just because we live good lives and vote every other November. We'll have to roll up our sleeves as individuals and take sides where our values bring us moral clarity. If we are to realize the promise of this moment, we are called to connect the power of our principles with the principles of our power. A year ago, the EU Service Committee in Cambridge formed a new organization called USC Just Democracy. Just Democracy was formed because we believe that it is crucial for the future of our country that the power of liberal faith communities be used positive political change. I feel so strongly about this that, as Steve mentioned, I moved over from my position with the Service Committee to head up Just Democracy a few months ago. And this year we've been finding out if we can make a difference here in New Hampshire by offering people of liberal, progressive, faith-based values a series of opportunities to extend and strengthen their engagement in our democracy. Everything we do in Just Democracy is related to two issues that are central to progressive faiths across the nation today: ending the war in Iraq and stopping climate change. From a moral and spiritual perspective, liberal faith-based communities are speaking with very similar voices about the war. We must bring our military engagement in Iraq to a quick, safe, and responsible end. And we must prevent a repeat of the enormous mistakes we've made in getting to this point. We must restore our Constitution, repairing the system of checks and balances that before this war were the envy of people around the world. And we must repair the deep damage that continues to be done to our military and to our veterans. And we are connected to that woman in Ethiopia. The changes to the atmosphere that we have created and which have fueled our unprecedented prosperity increasingly threaten us and our world, and we will struggle to cope with the climate changes that we have already locked in. But the effects of global warming will hit hardest those least able to cope, like that woman in Ethiopia that day. And it's a simple matter of justice that we deserve, and she deserves, something better than a generation of political leaders who look at the greatest challenge humankind has ever faced and sit on their hands. So we must use the power of our principles and the principles of our power. UUSC Just Democracy offers us a vehicle. Since May, we've been advocating for comprehensive action on global warming during meetings of governmental task forces, and we will be there in the legislature to push for bold action when they consider policy and regulatory alternatives. Since May, we've been talking with voters about the war and about the positions of our leaders and candidates for office. Since May, we've been talking with voters about our issues, and we will do our best to make sure that those who support an end to the war and bold action on global warming express that determination at the polls. And we're building a foundation on which we will use the principles of power to make sure that our leaders know that we are very serious about supporting them publicly as they advance our values of justice and compassion, and in opposing them publicly if they pursue the values of greed and intolerance. We will do it in a respectful, appreciative manner, but we will not hesitate to use all the tools of civic action. The great Unitarian minister, Theodore Parker, said that the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice. We bend it faster. Because if we're smart with this effort and we build synergy with the work of the UU Action Network that Tess George led so capably, and with the work of the UU Service Committee and other allies, there'll be no stopping us. Over the last year, as we've been developing Just Democracy, I've been meeting every month with all the progressive organizations working on these issues here in New Hampshire. It may surprise you to find out, at least here in New Hampshire, no other organization is working to advocate and lobby and push on these issues from the faith perspective. Many are organizing and educating, and that's really crucial, but I can't find any that are pushing from a faith perspective. Our leaders pay careful attention to numbers. They listen best when we speak forcefully and when we raise our voices for justice in great numbers. They will listen to us on the crucial issues of our time. The more of us, the better. People ask me about the legalities of what we're doing with Just Democracy, and they sometimes express concern about implications for their congregation. So it's important that I mention here that Just Democracy has been established in a way that frees it from the constraints that restrict charitable and religious organizations. Because of how we are formed, Just Democracy can work in the legislative and electoral domains. Just Democracy is a unique space separate from this congregation and even separate from your social justice committee. So there can be no question as to the legalities involved. So it's a space in which our individual voices can be strong, a space from which we can take action without the pretense of even-handedness on issues where we have reached moral clarity, and where we have found a solid foundation in principles of justice and human rights universal across humankind, like the war, like climate change. And no matter how the world looks on November 5th, we will need to keep pushing. Howard Zinn once quoted more eloquently than I could from a famous American document. We're all familiar with Thomas Jefferson's list of inalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We usually stop there when we read that document. But Jefferson goes on to say, whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute new government. If we want to end the war, if we want to stop the catastrophe that is climate change, if we want to help bend that moral arc of the universe, it's time to build on the power of our principles, the principles of peace and justice and respect for life. And it is time to use the principles of our power to work together to alter this government and to institute a new one. In the Christian tradition, the prophet Micah calls on us to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly. I will end with an interpretation of Micah's words by one rabbi centuries ago that made their way into the Talmud. Do not be daunted by the enormity of the world's grief. Do justly now. Love mercy now. Walk humbly now. You are not obligated to complete the work, but neither are you free to abandon it. We can create a better country if we do justice and love mercy and walk humbly and advance the work using all the tools of our democracy. We can end the war, and we can stop the injustice of climate change. Together, we can connect the power of our principles with the principles of our power. I invite you to join me after the service.
Thank you. Thanks very much. I will just join Mark in his invitation. After we conclude our service, give you a chance to get a cup of coffee. If you'd like to learn a little more about the workings of the Just Democracy program, you can join with Mark in our fellowship room, and Bob Keating, one of our social justice committee members, is going to facilitate that conversation.